Do you like to be the first? Name of your sex tape? Well, if you like to be the first to listen to podcasts, you might want to check out our Patreon, because now we're offering a brand new membership tier called Name of Your Sex Tape. I couldn't help it, guys. I'm sorry. For £5 a month, you'll get an ad-free version of our weekly episode on a Tuesday, a full day earlier than its usual release. So you can be the very first to talk about how funny our guest was, how quickly you cracked the case, or how badly I answered a question. Plus, you'll get all the benefits of our regular tier, including our live Zoom records, a special shout out on the podcast, and if you really like to hear us talk, we've got an entire back catalog of extra content. Check it out on patreon.com/drunkwomensolvingcrime.
Name of your sex tape. Name of your sex tape.
Name of your sex tape.
Fancy coming along to see Drunk Women Solving Crime live?
Ooh, yes, please.
Why not join us for our monthly London residency at the marvellous Museum of Comedy? We've got monthly shows through to June.
Plus, every show is a double header, so you get to see us record not one, but two episodes with two fantastic guests.
You can find tickets on our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com.
Shows are selling out fast, so be quick.
Noice.
Noice.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Red Nose Day podcast mashup is back. Acast are bringing you exclusive bonus podcasts from your favorite podcasters to raise money and change lives. There have been incredible mashups featuring shows like Homo Sapiens, Off Menu, Films to be Buried With, and Football Ramble, to name only a few. But now is the one you've been waiting for, the mashup of all mashups with Drunk Women Solving Crime and me. For those of you who previously only had ears for the Drunk Women Solving Crime team, I'm Richard Herring. I'm the host of Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, otherwise known as Rahulastapur.
And if you came for Rich, maybe you'll stay for us. We're Drunk Women Solving Crime, and your hosts are me, Taylor Glenn.
Me, Hannah George.
And me, Katie Wilkins.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is a true crime comedy podcast, and the three of us rotate hosting duties.
Although we're mashing our show formats together, I'm at the helm for this episode, so let me introduce this week's guest in a style he may find familiar. Our guest for this week's episode is probably best known for the time he gave an impromptu trumpet solo in the Purcell Rooms in London. He is also probably best known for the time that he won £6,000 on Tipping Point, beating Olivia Attwood, who Ben Shepherd referred to as his sloppy seconds. And he is finally, comedy rule of three, probably best known for the time when, before we started recording this podcast tonight, he spent 20 minutes looking for our child's favourite toy called Fluffy Rabbit. Can you please welcome, it's Richard Herring!
Hello.
Oh, Rich, tell us, what was it like to be on Tipping Point, straight up?
It was pretty good. I'd taken the piss out of it a lot on my podcast, Rahulastapur, and thank you. And Ben Shepherd had got to hear it and was a listener and would direct message me and say how rude I was. And then when I went on, I was overwhelmed with excitement and couldn't take the... I said I was going to go on. Oh, yeah, look, it's coming. Okay, it's difficult to tell which way it's coming, isn't it? Because of gravity. But I took it. I took it very seriously, and it was good, except that, you know, I got every question right in the final round. I played very tactically. I knocked off the bloke from, he's from the Crow Road, he's from other things, Poldark, maybe, I don't know what he's in now. And I got rid of him playing tactically. Then I was playing against this girl from Love Island who could nearly won, even though she didn't know the answer to anything. And then I got every single question right in the final round, but still didn't win the big jackpot because foolishly I went for Drop Zone 3 rather than one of the ones at the end.
Oh, no. Drop Zone 3, that's notoriously a bad drop zone. I do like Tipping Point, guys. I don't know if Katie and Taylor have sort of glazed over, but this isn't going to be the whole podcast.
I have watched this episode because we let our daughter stay up late to watch Rich play. She got really into it, actually. She was giving you pointers, wasn't she?
It was fun. It was really good fun. And it would have been nice to win. It was £20,000 for the big prize, but it wasn't worth the gamble. And I was correct not to gamble because I was too far away. My counter just got stuck. So it was still £6,000. So it's still pretty good, isn't it? But I won £50,000 on the chase. I brought £92,000 back from the board on the chase, and then we all won £50,000 for beating the chaser.
But that you're not better. Best known for it.
I'm not best known for it, but that was a better win. And I played the trumpet solo in the Purcell Rooms when I was 14 years old because the rest of the band had stopped playing and I played an extra note.
So is that like the King of Kings bit, you know, when we're kids and you have to sing that hymn and you never know if it's the verse where you've got the extra King of Kings?
No, it was just rubbish. I was just bad. And then, you know, I think I was not playing half the time. We were quite a good band, but I wasn't very good. I was third trumpet or something. And so then I was trying, and then I tried to come in at the right time, but I came in late, and I think just with a note that wasn't a note. It's like a sort of comedy thing to ruin at the end. But we weren't an official brass band because we had trumpets instead of cornets, so we were in some special division because they're very... Yeah, for a real brass band, you have to have cornets, and we had trumpets. So we were in sort of miscellaneous bands, but we did not win. We didn't get through to the next round.
Because that's what music is all about. It's about the winning. Have you ever seen that YouTube video? It's like a brass band playing in a church and someone on the trumpet sneezes and it just goes...
Yes.
It's so good.
It's really so good. Well, guys, I had most of the questions about Fluffy Rabbit, but I'm afraid we're out of time now. Yeah. So
We found Fluffy Rabbit. Well,
look, where was she?
Phoebe, where was she, Katie? You found her. Well, Phoebe found her.
Phoebe showed me where she found her. In her bedroom. We searched the whole house.
And we should also say at this point, maybe as well, just in case people don't know, Katie and Richard are married, because otherwise sounds like Richard comes into Katie's house and helps find random toys for her daughter.
I'm in your attic, Katie. I live in your attic.
Really helpful neighbour.
Do you remember when we did that case about the...
The man in the attic?
The man in the attic.
Yeah. This guy...
Where was it, Katie? Where was Fluffy Rabbit after I looked all around the house? Okay. Or Sophie Rabbit is really the real
name. It was by the doll's house in the corner under the window.
Of course.
It's always in their room. It's always in their room. This is what I've learned. And there's always another crevice that you've never explored in their room.
Fluffy Rabbit has appeared on my other podcast, Twitch of Fun, being operated by Phoebe as well. So some people at home will know what Fluffy Rabbit looks like. The big news I've learned recently is that Fluffy Rabbit is actually called Sophie Rabbit. So, you know, that's what we should be talking about.
What, that our child can't talk properly?
It's Sophie Rabbit, not Fluffy Rabbit. Yeah. Anyway, go on.
All right. Richard Herring.
Yeah.
Have you ever been the victim of a crime?
Been the victim of loads of crimes. I've already done two of them with you in the past, one of which when I had my mobile phone stolen by a man on a bike when I had a Hitler moustache. Go back and listen to that. It was one of the Edinburgh shows. Mm-hmm. When you were on my show, I told you about how I was swindled by a bogus landlord, which is a very good story.
Yes, indeed.
Worth listening to. Something to watch out for. He did get caught in the end, which was good. And we got our money back, which was amazing.
Yeah.
But probably helped destroy a relationship that I was in.
Well, thank God, am I right, guys?
Thank goodness, or we wouldn't be here now. And the one I've chosen this time, I've probably got more than this.
Katie stole your heart, come on.
Yeah, that's true. I think I've said that one before as well. But I was burgled when I was in the house. I used to live in Balham in South London with the comedian and writer Peter Bainham, Too Gorgeous.
That's what he's best known for.
Peter, too gorgeous. He's also gone on to write for Borat.
He wrote that film
Hollywood
we watched
films.
The other day.
He did Ron's Gone Wrong. He wrote, he's an incredibly successful multimillionaire now, but at the time we shared a flat in Balham that we rented. Coincidentally, weirdly, we lived downstairs from the playwright Terry Johnson, who wrote Dead Funny, and he wrote that play about the... Carry On team. He's written lots and lots of fantastic plays, often about comedians, but I think he's branched out. He just coincidentally moved in upstairs. He bought the flat upstairs So it was quite, you know, unusually a house in the middle of Balham with a lot of writers living in it.
Yeah.
And he lived upstairs, and he, because he had lots of money from all his plays, he was doing up, and he owned the flat, which would have been ridiculously cheap back then. So I would think I was about 31 or 32 at this time. It was maybe even younger than that, because it was when we moved in together when we were doing Vistafun, I think.
Is it just you and Peter Bainham?
It was me and Peter Bainham downstairs in one flat, and then
but
Terry
just
Johnson,
the two of you.
Yeah, and Terry Johnson lived upstairs in the other flat. Anyway, Terry Johnson was having the upstairs done up, and the builders left the front door. So we shared a front door, and then we had separate doors to our flats. And the builders left the front door open a lot. And I was in the house, and I heard somebody at the door, which I assumed was Peter. And he seemed to be struggling with his key a little bit. So as a joke, I thought, what I'll do, I'll go and open the door really quickly and go boo at him. So... because that's the kind of hijinks we got up to. So I opened the door, and this guy fell into the flat, right, who wasn't Peter Bainham. He was a little bald man who felt sort of 30, 40-year-old man, maybe a little bit older than I was at the time. And he'd sort of... he was clever, because I opened the door so quickly, and he sort of, in that time, he managed to, like, fall in backwards as if he'd been leaning against the door.
Wow.
So he managed to see, realised he'd been caught. He sort of leaned on him, fell in, and then pretended he was with the builder. He said, oh, sorry, I'm just waiting for the builders upstairs for something, you know. Huh. And so I said, oh, okay, fine, but I was suspicious. So it was, that was very smart of him to do that.
Right.
So I shut the door, but then I thought, well, I'll wait by the window to see what he does. So I sat in the window at the front to see if he was going to go upstairs or just run away. And he sort of, within a minute, he very shiftily came out and saw me and sort of scarpered up the road. So although he did not really commit a crime because he was breaking and entering but didn't get in, he was attempting to burgle me.
You foiled a burglary is what happened with a classic boo.
It's sort of weird. if I hadn't opened the door, he would have presumably got in. He was obviously someone who could pick a lock.
Right.
He only had to pick the Yale lock because the outside door was the one that locked a bit more difficultly. So I don't know what I'd have done if he'd walked into the flat and it was, you know, and I was just sort of in my bedroom going, who are you? And whether if he'd got in, he would have... I mean, I suppose he was in, he could have... If he was going to be violent, he could have been violent when he fell into the house. You know, I think it was just funny to see him sort of look round and then run away after he tried to persuade me that he was something to do with the building.
Also, do you know what I'd do as well? If I was going to sort of break into a house, I'd knock first and just go, is there anyone in?
Yeah.
Like, it just seems so stupid.
Yeah, he didn't even think to check.
Yeah, I think he just sort of saw the opportunity. I think, like, because the, you know, they left the front door open, but I think the door to the flat upstairs was shut. So, like, it was just laziness on the part of the builders that they didn't want to have to keep on opening and shutting the outside door, so they just left it open.
I mean, it speaks volumes about you as a flatmate, because you're obviously very, very quiet.
Yeah, it's true. Well, I was just in on my
own. There's no one home.
Yeah.
There's no one home.
So that was close. I'm sure there must be many, many more. I mean, I've been in fights and stuff like that. I've talked about that in a lot. I've done most of the stuff as material, I guess, somewhere down the line, but I don't think I've done that one as material. But yeah, that was a crime.
He did not see that coming. That's quite a way to catch somebody off guard.
It's like breaking a lock. He wasn't expecting to break into a prankster's house. Yeah,
right. But I'm very... because he literally fell in backwards, so it was it was very clever that he was ready for that.
Is there... any chance that he really was waiting for the builders and he fell in backwards?
And then decided to run away. No, I don't think there's any chance. Because also he was fiddling. He was like, he had something in the key, in the key.
Right. Hole,
which when he fell in, I sort of forgot. But, you know, I could hear someone struggling to open the door with a key. So he was struggling to open the door with the whatever they use.
What if he really thought you were a ghost, though? Like, we need to consider this possibility. He ran away because scary times.
Because I was scary. Well, maybe he was a ghost.
No, do you know what?
Maybe it's the ghost of someone who lived in that flat before and had a key.
Just like,
well, you released him. Just say boo and you'll release a ghost.
My favourite thing about this crime is that comedy foiled it.
Terry Johnson also left his washing machine on and it broke and he flooded our flat as well. That was the other thing that Terry Johnson did. So,
oh man,
he was a very bad person to have living upstairs.
Really don't want that guy above you.
Yeah. I'm like, great playwright, but a piece of shit.
People say you should use comedy to, you know, satirise fascists, but you can just satirise burglars. It's the same thing. So, yeah, we kind of covered this, but if you had the perp, what would you do?
I had him. I had him in my flat, had him at my feet
on the flat. Case
closed. I wish I'd challenged him at times, said, look, you're obviously not working with the people.
Right, be like, yeah, this is bullshit.
But I was literally just in a house on my own with a man I didn't know anything about who probably was... Probably he's trying to steal stuff to, you know, buy some drugs with, I would guess. So it probably was a good job that I didn't challenge him as a weak man in his early 30s. How dare you break into my flat?
I should have asked him where to find some drugs.
I'd say, you know, you can come in. You could have come in and I'd have given you a tenner. You could have had whatever. I'd let you have one thing of your choice from Pete's room. I don't think he's the bloke who used to make, you know, chicken lollies and trifle out of bits of bread and sherry and jam in our show. So I don't think Pete had much then. I'd advise him to wait 30 years and go and rob Peter in Hollywood. You've come too early. Yeah. If you're a time-travelling burglar from the future, come back in 2022.
Yeah, imagine if that guy comes to just buy a share in Pete. I don't know how that would work. Okay, you would gladly share £10 with him.
I mean, you know, we didn't have much. We were renting at the time. We weren't... we'd been on telly by that stage, I guess, but not. We hadn't really made any money. And because we hadn't made any money, you know, any money we made just went into our debt. You know, we weren't well off. I'd have shared something. I'd have given him a cup of tea or something.
All right, fair enough.
Didn't need to run off. Didn't need to treat me as if I was stupid and run away.
As if you were a ghost.
He could have just said, you got me, mate. I was trying to burgle you. Can I go now?
Oh, imagine. That's what I don't know. you've got me. Let's just everyone be up front.
Drunk women solving crime.
Now, we are going to move on to the true crime portion of the Mashup podcast. So, this part is going to be very typically drunk women solving crime. I have a case. No one else knows anything about it. I'm going to drip feed some clues and everyone's going to try and work it out. Are you guys ready to solve some true crime?
So I pumped.
I am. I like this because when I listen to your podcast, I always think I can solve it.
Excellent.
And I always get stuff before you guys do. I bet I don't now, but I'm very much going to try.
Do you know what? Because obviously we do often have a drink when we're doing this. Sometimes I listen to our podcast and I'm like, oh, well, why didn't I say that? That's a much better answer than what I said. So anyway, now, you guys, here we go. I'm going to start this case at 1:50 a.m. in the morning on the 6th of November. Mm. Two men are returning home from a dance in Northampton. They're going to a village in Hardingstone, but it's near Northampton. Now, they're walking home in their village. They see a fire in the distance. Question, at first, what do they think this fire is?
Ooh. Well, if they're in Northampton, probably an alien spacecraft or something, or some kind of god. Probably mistake it for...
Oh, wow. He's straight there. Okay.
Straight for the god.
Andrew Collins is from Northampton, who I used to do a podcast with, and, you know, they're very credulous people. There's a lot of shoes made in Northampton. Could have been a fire in a shoe factory.
Okay.
That sounds like an expression, doesn't it? It's like, oh, it was hotter than a fire in a shoe factory.
Very flammable shoes.
Yeah.
I mean, what do they think? They think it's a fire.
Okay.
I thought maybe it was Guy Fawkes.
Yeah, of course, yeah.
Because it's the day after, right?
Yeah. That's the kind of thing I would have got before you did, if I was listening.
It's not as easy when you're here, is it?
It's hard when you're up. It's like a tipping point.
It's just like tipping point, It's really stressful when you're in the zone.
Wait, am I the one from Love Island?
So, yeah, ding, ding, ding. Taylor is correct. They think it's Guy Fawkes Night. Now, as they get closer, they pass a neatly dressed man carrying a briefcase. They remark to him on the blaze and he replies, it looks like somebody's having a bonfire up there. As they get closer to the fire, they realise it is not a bonfire. Question, what is it?
A picture of a bonfire.
They're just so credulous.
Someone's a really good artist.
A regular fire.
Regular fire.
I think it's a vehicle on fire. Ooh. I think it's like a security van full of gold on fire.
Okay, awesome answer. Ooh. Hannah George, no, anything to add before I...
I mean, I don't know, like, if it was the Isle of Wight, it would be a Wicker Man. So I think perhaps I'm going to go Wicker Man or something maybe sacrificial is what I'm going
to
say.
Okay. Ah. I am giving it to Richard Herring.
Yes.
Damn it! With gold, all of it?
No. No, he was incorrect about the gold.
Damn
and
it.
The security van, but it was a vehicle. It was a car.
Okay.
So specifically, a Morris Minor has been set ablaze in a verge at the side of a country lane, and the flames are 12 feet high.
Oh my goodness.
Are you writing this down?
Nope.
What was that?
He's keeping score.
I was wiping something off the table.
Okay. What's a Morris Minor? I can't just let that go by because I've never heard of that. Sorry. Just for our international listeners who may not know, is that a well-known make of car? Is it a really old make of car? Because we don't know the year yet, do we?
Probably 50s, the Morris Minor, but it went. I think people had Morris Minors in the 50s, 60s, and 70s.
Okay. It's sort of like we're building a good
cars. Notoriously, cool. I think like a district nurse would drive a Morris Minor. Yeah, there's something about nurses and that sort of thing.
Oh. Just blew this case wide open, Love Island.
Is it quite a compact vehicle, maybe? I think. I don't know if there was a Morris Major.
All your vehicles are compact. Come on.
All right. Well, yeah. It's not an American car.
That's what your wife said to me in the shower this morning.
Hey.
That was for you, Katie.
Thank you. I love it.
You're so welcome.
Now, they found this car on fire, 12 feet flames. Because this is a village, in whatever year we'll get to in a second, they get the local constable and he gets another guy. And then they put the fire out themselves with water from the local pond. And once it is out, they discover something inside the car. Question, what did they discover?
We've ruled out gold.
Yes, that's true.
So there's only so many things left.
Is it a Wicker Man in the driving position?
Excellent guess.
A wicker driver.
Well, it might be a person.
Ooh.
Like, well, I think they'll be dead if it's a person. Uh-huh. I mean, anything that's in there is going to be quite badly burnt if the flames are going 12 feet in the in the air.
Yeah.
But I would imagine, unless it's a vehicle that's been used in a robbery, in which case there won't be anything in it, but it's a vehicle that's being used in a murder, I would guess.
Ooh, excellent instincts.
Yeah, and I'm thinking... Sorry, Taylor, go on.
No.
Female workplace. With Rich.
It's a female workplace. I'll just barge in and answer first, and then you can...
Actually, Rich, are there any catchphrases you can sing?
Have you ever tried to suck your own cock at ladies? I don't. Do I have anything? So, I mean, I've got lots of singing. I've got from my other podcast. I've got babushka. Oh, dadushka. That's from Twitch of Fun.
Okay, if female workplace comes up again, feel free to sing that.
Okay, you're all my babushkas.
Thank you.
Wait, does that mean grandmother though?
It is presumably very offensive. Anyway, what were you guys going to say?
I was thinking, maybe there would be something secret. Because I'm thinking about this guy with the briefcase, right? And in the suit in the middle of the countryside.
Randomly leaving the scene.
Is it evidence? Is there some evidence in there? So maybe some papers or something.
All right. We've got Wicker Man or evidence from Hannah. We've got body or murder from Rich. What have we got from Taylor?
For some reason, I don't think it's a person, but I can't think of what else it is. There's stuff. Is it stuff, Katie?
All right, stuff. It's excellent stuff. Answer.
Thanks. A lot of shoes. Loads of shoes.
From that damn factory that keeps lighting on fire.
All right.
Burning rubber.
I tell you what, I'm afraid I've got to give it to Richard again. Although technically, Taylor, it is stuff.
Thank you.
It's a body. A
body is definitely stuff. That's what cops call it. We found stuff.
Right? I mean, it's not stuff. Okay, right. Trigger warning if anyone is that way inclined. Are you inclined to be triggered? That's the thing. I will continue. You've had the warning. The charred remains of the head is on the driver's seat and the right arm is burnt off at the elbow. And one of the police thought that the head was a rugby ball when they first approached the car. Now... Yes, exactly.
You mean the pond water didn't work? That's crazy.
It didn't save this burnt man's life. Now, a wooden mallet is found near the car with three human hairs attached to the head. Ooh. The fire has pretty much destroyed this car, but the number plate at the rear was still largely visible and not damaged. And the police were able to determine who it belonged to. And it belonged to a man called Alfred Arthur Roos. Now, the two men that had found all this told the police about the man with the briefcase that they had seen, and an appeal was also issued in the press for that man to come forward to help with inquiries. Now, what I'm going to do for this bit is I'm going to give you a little bit more forensic information of what was discovered, and then I'm going to get you to guess the year, okay? The things that were found, there was a forensic examination of the vehicle, and that revealed a joint on the feeding pipe between the petrol tank and the carburetor of the vehicle had been loosened before the fire had ignited, and that allowed petrol to freely stream into and beneath the car, which indicated that the blaze had been deliberate. Also, spectroscopic tests conducted upon the victim's blood and a microscopic examination of his air passages revealed that the victim had been alive, albeit unconscious, when the fire had started. Mm. Furthermore, he was estimated to have died within 30 seconds of the onset of the fire, and the victim himself was estimated to have been between 33 and 37 years old. Due to the condition of his lungs, he had likely worked in an extremely dusty atmosphere throughout his life. So my question is, what year do we think this is?
52.
52 from Taylor.
Because of the Milton Berle car.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of got to be around about there, isn't it? I would say, I don't know when the Morris Minor started. Let's go for 62.
All right, 62. Hannah George.
Is Hannah going to keep the pattern, or is she going to go her own crazy
higher
way?
Or lower? With an odd price number? Is right, Hannah. Come
1912,
on.
1912.
Yes, 1912.
1912. In that case.
Oh, it's earlier than we've said, isn't it?
Okay, yeah. I think Taylor is the closest with 52, but the year is 1930.
Oh, yeah.
That's closer than 1912.
Oh, actually, 22. Years off. No, it's Hannah.
It's equidistant.
George? It's me via Rich, though, because
Rich can do maths.
Well, Rich knows my... I love the fact my catchphrase on this is 1912.
Yeah.
So, yes, I guess I was closest.
Wow, that's much earlier. Is they had Morris Minor in 1930?
Yes, they did.
Wow.
Please take any further questions on that subject to Wikipedia. Now, this car belongs to Alfred Arthur Roos. He is 34 years old at the time. That checks out if he is the victim. Now, DNA is not properly invented until 1953, and it is not used in a crime case until 1987.
Wow.
So we do not have DNA in this case at this point. Now, the police go to the wife, Mrs. Rouse, and she lives in Barnet. And she was able to confirm that her husband had left home at approximately 8:30 p.m. on the 5th of November to attend a business meeting in Leicester, and he had arrived home at a time that she believed to be approximately 2 a.m. the following morning. He didn't say anything to her. She was then asked to accompany police to Northampton to assist in the identification of the victim. But due to the condition of the remains...
Come
look at the stuff, right? She was not allowed to see the body because it was horrible. She was asked to confirm whether she could identify scraps of clothing and a wallet which contained 30 shillings, had been found on the victim. She stated that the items of clothing looked like those that her husband had worn, but she couldn't be certain, and the wallet had definitely belonged to her husband.
Okay.
So my next question is... Do you guys think this is the body of Alfred Arthur Rouse?
Ooh.
No from Richard. Before you guys answer, I just want to recap. It's his car, it's his wallet, it's his style of clothing and age.
Yeah,
but is it his body? So stick with no from Richard.
Because you wouldn't have asked us if it was. That we'd
or
too
would
obvious.
I? That, it
or
could be a...
would I?
I think Alfred Rouse is the man with the briefcase.
Ooh.
Oh my God.
Oh, twist.
Twist business yeah. Briefcase.
I agree, though. I think that if you're going to do anything like that, if, for example, he wanted to fake his own death, doing it via fire is often a good way of doing it. And interesting that the wallet survived.
Yeah.
So maybe, like, did he go, I'm just going to go out and buy a flame retardant wallet? I would be interested to know like what it was about. And also it's like the 15 shillings, they were definitely my husband's 15 shillings. Like we don't know, I suppose, with that.
Also, if he started the fire, he could have waited for passers-by and then he threw the wallet in last, knowing that he would cry. I mean, this is ballsy, right? Because he's literally waiting for a witness, and then he's just gonna walk by with his briefcase like, I don't know what it is.
Uh-huh. But why does he need a witness?
Well, he doesn't.
Because if he's faking his own death, which I'm starting to think that's what this case is about, then he wants people to discover this.
Okay.
And identify it as his body. So he's done it in a place where it's not so remote that people aren't gonna, do you know what I mean? It doesn't sound like the perfect place to light a car on fire if you don't want it to be found.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So we've got, it's not him from Rich. We've got, it's not him from Taylor, it sounds like.
Yeah.
And so. Hannah George, is it his body or not?
I don't think it is.
It's not his body?
It's not his body.
You guys are all correct. It is not his body. You saw the twist a mile away. Now, my next question is, what do you think has happened here?
Well, I mean, all sorts of stuff could have happened. But do we know what kind of trouble this guy might have been in? Like what
We'll get to that. Your gut feel. I mean, basically, it sounds like you all think he's faked his own death from... You can say that if you want.
He's got the homeless man's been killed him.
Okay.
It's found a homeless man that looks about the same size rugby ball-sized head as him.
Yeah.
Or maybe got a body from a morgue or something. And then he's burnt that. And then he's walked off with his briefcase gone. It looks like a bonfire up there.
Yeah.
And then run away. And then he's jumped in a car. Oh, no, he's just burnt his car.
Well, no, excellent answer. Has anyone got anything to add or that's different from that?
I was wondering, is he badly in debt? So he's faking his death to just escape from all of that, start a new life? Because sometimes that's a motive in these cases that we've done.
Excellent suggestion.
Or he really doesn't like his wife. He's like, don't you even know what my wallet looks like? It's like you don't even know me. Here's 30 shillings for you to live on for the rest of your life, bitch.
Yeah.
You say that he went to a business meeting, was it the day before?
Yeah.
So maybe it was something to do with that. So I'm thinking that it didn't go very well. And maybe he's killed his boss or something. He's kind of, this is revenge. But so he's like, it's also an opportunity.
A motivated murder.
Okay. Maybe because they're exactly the same age and his boss is more successful. Because that pisses me off about people when I find out their age. And I'm like, oh, you're the same age as me, yet you're so successful. It's so annoying. But anyway, please go on.
I know. I hear you. I was just thinking about how I used to work in a call center and my boss was younger than me. And like, if we needed the toilet, we had to wait for our 10 minute break. So like, I effectively had to ask a 20 year old if I could go to the toilet. And I was like 23 and I was like really above that. So yeah, I hear you. But anyway, now, yes, you guys have all got excellent instincts on this. Drunk women solving crime.
This Red Nose Day, your donation will help people here in the UK and around the world live free from poverty, violence, discrimination, and support them with their mental health. This includes helping people right now in Ukraine and the mass displacement of people in many parts of the world. Head to comicrelief.com/podcastmashup to give what you can now.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you thought the only way to get a more defined jawline with natural-looking results was through surgery, think again. Juvederm Volux XC is a non-surgical injectable gel filler that improves moderate to severe loss of jawline definition and can help you achieve natural-looking results with little downtime. Even better, this improved definition lasts up to 1 year with optimal treatment. No maintenance required. Improve jawline definition for a smooth, sculpted look with Juvederm Volux XC. For important safety information and to find a licensed specialist, visit Juvederm.com. That's Juvederm.com. Not for people with severe allergic reactions, allergies to lidocaine, or the proteins used in Juvederm. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. There's a risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. Talk to a licensed specialist to find out if it's right for you.
So, Alfred Arthur Rowse was born in London in 1894. He had an English dad and an Irish mum, but his mum left to be an actress. So he was partially raised by an aunt with his siblings, but he was a good, well-behaved child. He was bright and athletic, and he left school at 14. He was an estate agent for a bit, then he worked in textiles. He was working in carpentry. He did evening classes. He was a good singer and a good musician. He met a girl, Lily Mae Watkins, and he was living his best life. Now, question, while we're doing the background, what comes along and thwarts Alfred's plans to continue living happily ever after?
Oh, so this would be like 1920-something.
The World War One?
Yes! Ding, ding, ding! It is World War One. I'm not giving you guys a chance to answer because Richard is correct. This happened with Al Murray as well. We just had to like, yep.
At least say like he got a fidget spinner or something first. Yeah. Like, come on.
I want to know what happened. We're here to solve a crime, ladies.
And Rich can get it right.
We're not here to have fun.
No time for humorous answers.
That could be the Paul quote for this episode. We're not here to have fun with Richard Herring.
Now, World War One comes along. So he enlists voluntarily. He marries the fiance in St. Albans, near where we are in Hertfordshire.
Oh, nice.
Isn't it lovely? And then he goes off to France. Now, he served with distinction at this time, but he also fathered an illegitimate child.
Ooh.
So, yeah, swings and roundabouts.
Now, where he's spending loads of his time now because he's got this kid that he has to look after.
Yeah, oh, mate, hold that thought. So, it is a little flash of what's to come, but we've kind of already touched on this with Taylor's suspicions about debt. So, anyway, Rouse's unit was then committed to the Battle of Festubert in Artois, which began on the 15th of May in a bayonet attack. Rouse came face to face with a German soldier and he lunged at him, but he missed. And he has this traumatic memory of like waiting for this guy to then attack him back. And apparently that stayed with him for the rest of his life. And his sleep was plagued by nightmares. And today we would call that PTSD. But then he gets sent to the Battle of Festubert and there's an explosive shell which injures his head, knee and thigh. He's got loads of fragments of shrapnel in his head and his leg. He's unconscious. Because of his injuries, he gets hospitalised for a year. He has lots of operations on his temporal lobe region and his leg. Yes, exactly. Yeah, Taylor's being a psychologist. I can hear it. Yeah, you are correct.
That's
Taylor.
All I did. Oh.
I'm literally here going like... temporal lobe is on an ear, right? But it's fine.
But like, also, I'm totally projecting onto Taylor. She might not be being a psychiatrist. Oh, it's so meta. But yeah, basically, there's head trauma. So he couldn't bend his knee beyond a certain angle. He gets discharged in 1916 and he's awarded a military pension of 20 shillings per week. That is significant. That 20 shillings a week is good. It sure would be a shame if anything was to happen to that.
Uh-huh. Okay.
Now, don't worry, it's fine to start with. He was severely disabled at this point. They're not going to take a pension from a disabled person. They're not monsters. They let him recuperate a bit first. So he's in Stoke Newington with his wife.
Is this Lily Mae still?
Yeah, he's with her.
But he's had this child in France.
Yeah, that child is just off in France. We actually, that was a mislead. We don't hear from that child again.
Okay.
For this story.
Okay.
They actually raise the pension 25 shillings because his sleep is so bad. And then he does start making progress. So from 1917, the doctors, well, but they basically start not believing him about the dizziness.
God, I wish somebody would pay me more because my sleep was bad. That would be a sweet deal. Just throwing that in there. It's just not how it works.
I would be a millionaire. That would be the best. I mean, I know it's serious because it's a military pension, but still. Now, they're putting it down to neurosis and his pension gets lowered to 12 shillings and then he signed off completely in 20... Do you know what? I've written 2020, but it's 1920.
What pretty good guy. Like?
He finally gets signed off and then there's the bloody pandemic.
And now he still can't work. But his knee is a lot better. He can move again. His head has healed. So he gets back out there. My question is, what activity does he throw himself into? And there are three main ones. So go nuts. What does he throw himself into? He's back out there.
Ooh, I want to say something like ultimate frisbee.
Okay, I love it.
Is it?
You're not far off for one of them.
Is it playing the trumpet, finding Fluffy Bunny? What am I like?
Do we know enough about him to guess what he would be doing?
No, go nuts. The sky's the limit.
Well, it's kind of leisure, is it?
Does he do the Charleston? Do you get into doing the Charleston? Okay, the roaring 20s kick in.
Ooh.
We are in the roaring 20s.
That is a hard dance with a tricky knee.
Yeah.
Okay. All you guys know about him is that he had lots of different interests and he fathered an illegitimate child.
Mm-hmm.
Does he fuck loads of women and have more illegitimate children? That's what I'd do.
Okay.
In the 1920s.
In that, sure, not now, right?
Yeah, not now.
Not in the 2020s.
Yeah, he becomes a fuckboy. Just
right, yeah. Right.
Well, so I'm wondering if there's been this huge personality change with the head injury.
Yeah.
So if he starts actually doing something that's way out of character, although it's hard for me to say what that is, because we just, you know, we know only so much about him. But if it was like, you know what, I'm going to say archery.
Okay.
I don't know why.
You know, frisbee and archery, I'm giving you guys a point. One of the things is he joins a tennis club.
Oh,
okay.
And I feel like that's the same thing.
As archery or as frisbee? Which do you think that's closest to? It's similar to both.
Jesus Christ, don't play tennis with Katie.
Do you know what? Rich will never play tennis with me again.
Katie's not very good at tennis.
I'm really bad.
You'd be better if you had a bow and arrow, though.
Yeah, that's true. I wouldn't.
Imagine that. 15 love, motherfucker.
But do you know what? It's like a sport hobby thing. He's getting active.
Yeah. Okay.
He's enjoying his body. Mm. Giving Rich a point and Hannah a point, he turns into a fuckboy.
Right.
Okay. Oh, well done, guys.
And the third thing is he gets a job, well, sort of like mechanical vehicles initially and then traveling, sort of salesman driving and then traveling. So he's like a sort of a door-to-door salesman. But basically he starts having lots of affairs. He presents himself as single and ready to mingle.
That's handy when you're a door-to-door salesman. You know, you can kill two birds.
Absolutely, he kills lots of those types of birds. Starting with,
what was he? Was he like selling spunk? What was he doing?
Do you know what? He sells different things. He starts off in sales with car type stuff.
Okay,
and then over the next few years, he ends. I'll get to what he's selling, but to start,
I have not heard the word spunk in a very, very long time. I just want to thank Love Island over there.
The villa is absolutely caked in it. So
if you say bonk later, then you win the retro bingo.
That's just 290s. Okay, now get ready to be slightly grossed out. He seduces a 14-year-old girl, knocks her up, and abandons her to give birth in a home for unwed mothers.
Oh dear.
Yes. In 1925, he begins an affair with a domestic servant called Nellie Tucker. Now, she is significant because she is the first of many women to actually obtain a child support order.
Uh-huh.
Hey.
And now, what is horrible about this, other than the whole paedophile sort of sex with underage children thing, is that he would typically target women from poor socioeconomic backgrounds. So he's this sort of flashy traveling salesman, and he promises to marry them. So it is classic fuckboy stuff, as Hannah has said. And he actually does bigamously marry a few of them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, he's traveling around and he's never there. So by 1929, he's got this quite well-paid job selling braces and garters. You were interested in what he was selling up and down the country. Now, he's got a mortgage with wife number one and a six-year-old son with her. And so that's sort of okay. But the other child support starts mounting up and he has to form a plan.
Okay.
In 1930, he buys a Morris Minor.
Oh.
And he draws a life insurance policy for £1,000 in his name.
Oh.
You can't claim on yourself, though.
I'm dead, I guess.
You can't go, I'm dead, can I have my
£1,000? This is a great point. And presumably wife number one would get it, or he puts it in another name that he's also got the ID for. I'm not sure exactly how that would work, but that's a good point.
Wouldn't he have control over however she holds her finances, though?
Well,
it's only going to be one bank account. They probably whack it into the family bank account, which is really his.
That's true. She probably doesn't have enough rights. That's a good point too, because or just like her brother just inherit all his money, like, because like you can't trust
where's the
woman.
Nearest man
where's
we gotta give
owner?
This money away.
Yeah, or does the six-year-old son get it? Who knows? Now, my next question is, because we're basically sort of back up to date.
Mm-hmm.
So
2020. Yep. With you.
Now, you guys have touched on this, but who do you think the man found in the car was?
Ooh.
Well, okay. Rich said a homeless person. And it
Rich
sounds like
homeless.
He was very unscrupulous about anyone who was having a hard time. So
yeah,
seems like that would stack up.
Uh-huh. Hannah said boss. But you guys, now that you know the background, you might want to change your answers too.
Well, I can't help thinking that if he's selling braces, and did you say, what else was he selling?
Garter. So he's actually meeting these women through what he does as well. But
braces are for men, right?
Yeah, but garters are for ladies. Garters are for women, though. And that's how you get with the ladies. Go, you want to try on this garter? Yeah. To put it up on your leg. That's right.
Is this reminding you of your first date, Katie?
Wow, I'm so turned on right now.
Yeah, let's have a look at the other leg. Ooh, that's what I would do.
Guys, we need. It's
a good. I'm right making
this. Pause the podcast. I'm so hot.
The point is.
Now put on some braces.
Even better.
That's right.
Guys, as much as I want this to really see out how far it'll go, I also think that potentially, what I was thinking is, was he the husband of Nellie Tucker or something like that? Because presumably what I'm saying about the braces is that, you know, you don't knock on a door knowing if it's going to be a single woman. But what if you think, whoa, I have a bit of that, realise she has a husband. She's like, well, I want to be with you. Why don't we knock him off as you? So I think it might be linked to somebody that he's
excellent
got pregnant.
Excellent guess.
That
excellent
is a good guess. And what it turned out to be like, I'm worth £1,000 if I kill somebody and make it look like me.
I can only really do any of my proper thinking when Rich and Katie are flirting. So we're going to need more of that if you want anything else from me.
It's just like a real detective situation. Yeah, okay.
I think it's got to be someone he doesn't know, hasn't it? Otherwise, it's too easy to trace back to him. So I think he's just...
Okay, yeah, you're sticking with...
I'm going with an itinerant or a cadaver that he's procured from somewhere. Right. Although you said he was still alive, right?
The suggestion was still alive
in the car.
That's right.
Nah. So pretty much ruled out...
Not a cadaver.
So presumably somebody maybe that he's got in the car with him to sort of drive to this spot... Yeah. Unless he's like tied him up, and you know, you kind of presume that he is someone he knows.
Of you know, that kind of thing.
I was just thinking, did he literally say, like, you can have a drive if you want, so get into the driver's seat? You know, do you know what I mean? Because like, I'm thinking that he must be sat in the driver's seat, right? So,
oh, I just spilled petrol on you. Oh, I've dropped my cigarette on you. Sorry.
So it was a decapitated body, right?
Well, we don't know if that was because of the fire or because of him, but yes. When they found it, it was.
Well, it can't have been decapitated if
that's
it was alive.
That's true.
That's an extra brutal. You don't need to do that to kill somebody. So there's an element of brutality that maybe doesn't stack up with all this.
Okay.
I'm going to get a stranger, kill him because he looks like me, and light the car on fire. Why would you decapitate a body unless you're sadistic?
And
nobody who plays tennis is that sadistic. You know, unless it's archery tennis.
I mean, that's very Hunger Games, to be fair.
But yeah, no, that's all I got.
Okay. All right. Well, good instincts. It was a man he met in a pub. This is very sad. This person is still to this day literally unknown.
Wow. Oh, no.
And I will get to some more details about that. But for now... So Rouse was literally, as you guys have touched on the hunt for somebody of a similar build to him. And on the 3rd of November, he meets this guy, and this unknown guy was down on his luck, and he made some comment to Rouse along the lines of, no one would care if he lived or died.
Absolutely horrible.
Rouse promises him a job in the Midlands and that he'd pick him up en route to that job on the 5th of November. And he later said that he chose the 5th of November on purpose for the literal smokescreen of the cover of Bonfire Night, delaying detection. And he gives this unlucky unknown man a bottle of whiskey to drink as they drive. So we're back up to speed. This is where we kind of
came going off this guy, you know.
I know. I mean, he has
I'm going to give him a chance. Let's see what happens next, Hannah. Come on. We've all done stuff.
So Rouse wants to start fresh, obviously, by faking his own death. Now, upon escaping the scene, surprise, he was the man with a briefcase. He hitched a ride to London. He was at home with wife number one for 30 minutes. And then he goes off to elope with one of the pregnant chicks that he's banging. This woman, Phyllis Jenkins, is
very
this...
well put, Katie.
I mean, I'm speeding it up.
You just said it so straight-faced with the way you phrased it. Oh, golly. Anyway.
It's this Welsh lady that he's promised to marry, and he gets the train to Glamorganshire, and she asks him where his car is and why it's taken him 18 hours longer than he said to reach her. Question, what does he tell her?
In Glamorganshire, sausages aren't real. That's just a joke for Welsh people.
No, it's going to go down.
And there's a few of them.
Does he tell her the truth? Because whilst I don't think it's particularly romantic, I also kind of like, a guy fakes his own death for you? Okay, I'm interested.
Yeah, right. Is she addicted to drama? What's her deal? Yeah. Rich, anything to add? Any either different to that?
He got a big order of garters in and he had to sell lots of garters. And it's gonna, and he's got some extra money, so it was worth the
Blames extra it on time the work. Taken. Okay, excellent guesses, everybody. He tells her that it was stolen in Northampton. The car was stolen in Northamptonshire. And then he spins a whole tale about how he's reported it to the police and there's insurance. And the next morning, Phyllis shows him the newspaper. And on the front of this newspaper is an image of a burnt out car. And the whole article is like speculation about whether the deceased occupant has been the owner, if he's been murdered. And Rouse denies the car in the paper is his, and he leaves and he gets the coach from Cardiff to Hammersmith. Question, what does Phyllis Jenkins do next?
Goes to the Rozzers.
Goes to the Rozzers, dobs him in, turns him in. Excellent. Anything different to that, you guys?
Yeah, no, I think that she's not having it. So, yeah, I think she follows him. She follows him to Hammersmith to get the truth.
Follows him. Wonderful. Taylor Glenn.
My instinct was that she turns him in or goes to the police.
Okay, fantastic. You guys are all correct. You're excellent detectives.
Nice job, Phyllis.
She rats him out to the police. So she informs the local police that Rouse has been at her house and she tells them his intended destination. So they tell the Metropolitan Police of his whereabouts. So consequently, that evening, he's arrested in Hammersmith when he arrives at the coach terminal by the Metropolitan Police. And they've been waiting for him. Now, at the Hammersmith police station, Rouse was informed that the Northampton Police are also coming to interview him. And he spins this whole... He just basically gives this rambling statement. And he says that the victim was a hitchhiker that he'd encountered in St. Albans and that he'd accidentally set his vehicle alight. There's this whole thing about how, you know, it was an accident and he was on his way to Scotland Yard because he wanted to confess it all. And, it, you know, he's like, oh, I'm glad it's over. This isn't what I wanted.
I was just saying, it sounds like our son who every time he does anything wrong goes, it was an accident.
Yeah. It does. It's chilling.
It was an accident. I was walking away with the briefcase rather than putting the fire out.
I didn't see where I was going. So he then has immediate trouble when he gets to Northampton police station because he contradicts his earlier statement. He claims that he encountered the hitchhiker in a very different place, going towards the Midlands, and they'd offered him a lift. And then,
I mean, that's just an insult to St. Albans.
And then he gets this whole BS about this man smoking a cigar and that he was trying to fill the petrol tank with a can of petrol and it all just goes wrong. Then he tried to get him out because the car's on fire with all the flames, but he can't open the door, so he just fled in a panic. I mean, flashes of Succession, am I right? But then,
I mean, wouldn't he be burnt? Yeah. And you know,
why isn't his hand singed from trying to open the car door? Yeah.
And why did his head come off?
And why did he take his briefcase to fill up the petrol tank?
No, this comes up in the court case, and we might not have time for everything. But yeah, basically, at some point, he says, so he's one of his answers to that, because he gets cross-examined in the court case, and he says that the reason he had the briefcase was because while he was giving this guy a lift, this guy like started touching the briefcase. So when he got out of the car to fill it with petrol, he took the briefcase because he just didn't like the way the guy was touching it. Like, it's all very... They get all these people in the court case to testify, and they get like a Morris Minor mechanic to come in and testify. And he's all like, that would never happen. We've built our cars brilliantly and that would never happen. Someone's definitely done that on purpose to start a fire.
Oh boy, never bring in the Triple M.
Yeah. And then they also bring in all of the loads of the mistresses to kind of establish, you know, financial motivation.
That's a good point in the movie. Great point in this film.
Yeah.
I hope they like start a clique and they're all just like hang out
and
together.
And then they all become best friends and it's not so bad that they're all just going to be in poverty forever. But he doubles down. He's like, it's accidental fire. This guy had a cigar. He was drunk. So he is formally charged with the murder of an unknown man on the 27th of November. The trial is in January 1931. Mm. And as I've said, all this stuff is like, that's how he got petrol in his clothes. It's like back and forth. Three mistresses were brought in. But he contradicted himself even in the court case.
He's a very bad liar for a salesman.
He is. He, like, forgets what he said.
Mm-hmm.
There was one thing that was, like, one of the I think it must have been Phyllis, said that he arrived at her house on the 6th of November and he smelt of petrol and his eyebrows were slightly scorched. But anyway, the trial lasted for 6 days and the jury debated for 25 minutes before reaching a verdict. Mm. Question, was he found guilty or not guilty?
Absolutely guilty.
Guilty.
I'd love a 20-minute acquittal, though.
It's a very...
Come on, guys.
Come on, he said he didn't do it. We've got to trust him.
I mean,
why would he lie? Judge, eh?
You guys are on it. He is guilty. He's found guilty. He was unanimously found guilty of murder and sentenced to death on the 31st of January. Oh. So on Tuesday, this is pre-1960, whatever the last man hung for. On Tuesday, the 10th of March, 1931, Rouse was hanged in Bedford Jail. Now, he never formally confessed, but he did write a random letter to some publication called The Daily Sketch, which explained some of it, which is why we have some of the information about the unknown man. So I'm just really quickly going to skim through a couple of pertinent things about this case. The body of the victim was interred in a grave marked with a simple cross bearing the inscription, "In memory of an unknown man, died November 6, 1930," and a metal box containing several newspaper accounts of Rouse's trial were buried with the victim. Ooh. In May 2012, the family of a 23-year-old man named William Briggs, missing since 1930, contacted Northamptonshire Police in the hope that advanced in DNA profiling would provide an identification. Mm. So they went through this whole thing, but it wasn't him. But like loads of families have tried to see if this is their missing person, it's still missing person. It's not been identified for all these people in pain trying to find their families. So no one has found it. And this case is called the Blazing Car Murder. Mm. And they have not found who the victim was.
Wow.
Normally we try and raise a glass at the end of an episode.
Well, here's to Phyllis, eh? Phyllis Jenkins for dobbing him in.
Bringing him to justice. Yeah.
Phyllis James. Yes. A Glamorgan sausage is a vegetarian sausage.
Ow.
Drunk women solving crime.
We're now going to do some emergency questions.
Woo!
Hooray!
I'm excited!
Now, this is the part where we would usually ask our audience for a true crime story, but this is Drunk Women Solving Richard Herring.
Yeah. No one can solve me. No
one can figure him out.
No one can solve you.
I am baffled.
You've been married to me for 10 years and you can't solve me.
I've got no answers. And so I would like to hand over to Richard for this segment.
Okay.
Woo!
I should have looked up ones that had crimes in them, shouldn't I? This is good for you, Katie.
Okay.
You have a lot of choice with this one. What word are you unable to pronounce out loud?
Taylor's got an answer.
Oh, I just have so many of them. Championing. Fuck. See?
That's pretty good.
Championing.
Actually, that's quite hard. Championing.
Championing. It is quite hard. Championing at the bit. I can't say, I can never remember how to say opprobrium, whether it's opprobrium or opprobrium. I don't get to say it. Opprobrium.
I would say opprobrium. What about orangery? Is it orangery or orangery?
Orangery.
All right.
Orangery.
On Escape to the Chateau, they pronounce it orangery, but that's maybe because it's they're a wee bit French.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's not about pronunciation for me. It's more about literally just saying the word wrong in the sense that, I remember, what's it, a lapel? I called that a laple.
Oh, I love it.
And it was only like fucking hell. I was researching it for a case, and it was about somebody that kept a swastika on their lapel, who was a kind of like a German spy. This was the Isle of Wight lady.
Oh, yeah.
And I was telling my boyfriend about it, and I was saying, oh, yeah, she had it on her lapel. And like, luckily, and he like looked at me, and because I do get things wrong quite a lot, I see a little look in his eye where he's like, I don't want to correct you, but I can see the look. And I'm so pleased he did, because obviously if I'd said it
you
at the show,
in front of other people.
Yeah, exactly. So,
I read I think it was from that Fesshole Twitter account, but someone saying that it took them till they're 28 years old to realise that having failed their cycling proficiency badge didn't mean they thought they weren't allowed to cycle out on the road because they'd failed their cycling proficiency. But they must have gone, oh, sorry, I can't join you. I haven't got my cycling proficiency. They go, what are you talking about?
Oh God, man, that could have been me. I didn't put it on Fesshole, but that's certainly what I thought when I failed.
Was it?
Did you fail, Katie?
Yeah.
No.
I was like the only kid that failed.
Oh, mate.
Maybe one other kid failed.
I will do another question. But here's one that's vaguely crime related, but probably the answer is no. Have you ever taken a lie detector test?
Yes.
She got you. She got you, Katie. She got you.
It's pretty easy to me.
Have you ever? I was called up to be in a identity parade when I was just walking around. I think I'd just finished being a student, and a policeman asked us.
Ooh.
I think we got paid £10 to go and stand an identity parade. And then the woman picked out the wrong person. She didn't pick out the criminal.
Did she pick you?
She didn't pick me. I don't think it was me and my friend. I can't remember even which friend it was, but we'd have looked like children, innocent children. But we all laughed because she picked the wrong person. And we knew who the right person was because he came in with policemen in handcuffs. And then was let out the handcuffs. So he found it quite funny. I think it was definitely him that did it, but he found it quite funny that she hadn't picked him out.
Do you remember what the crime was?
No, I can't remember.
I hope it was something really traumatic.
I'm not sure we were even told what the crime was, but we all joked with the guy being picked out that he had to go into prison and stuff.
Oh my God. Yeah.
So there you go.
Is that how they do that, though, for like lineups? They'll literally find you from around the street?
I think they just go and find people who vaguely fit. They don't like have a casting agency to go, right, let's get 10 guys who look exactly like the description. The police aren't trying to get the person off, you know what I mean? So they actually just need 10 people who vaguely resemble the right sex, because we're all different heights and everything. So it wasn't like, let's make it difficult. They're not trying to.
That's one of my nightmares, though, if I got picked for one and we're supposed to vaguely look alike, and I'd be like, oh my God, they're horrific looking.
Yeah.
Is this what you think I look like?
Well, everyone says I look like Charlie Borman, who's going to be a guest on Rahela's Bassoon, and I find him quite an unattractive man, so very upset.
You're going to open with that.
I'm going to tell him.
I need him to tell me to put on some braces, and then I'll know if he's sexy.
Okay. This is an official one, but I've always wanted to ask you, what is the worst crime you three young ladies have committed yourself?
Good one.
I used to shoplift quite a lot. I still pick and mix. One pick and mix whenever I go to a pick and mix, on principle.
On principle.
What is the principle?
They're too expensive, so they're stealing from us. So I'm like the Robin Hood of pick and mixes. I steal from the pick and mix rich people and give to me.
And give it to me.
Give to myself. Right.
What do you go for? Do you try to go for the most valuable pick and mix?
No.
That would be the heaviest, would it? What is the most valuable?
Probably those giant gobstoppers would be the biggest score. If you were going to do that, those big gobstoppers are that, but they're quite hard to steal.
Harder to steal. Is that a gobstopper in your pocket?
The one I went for is like the cola bottle, but it tastes of like bubble gum. That one, it's a sort of bubbly gum. Uh-huh. Haven't done it for a little while because pick and mixes have been closed for 2 years.
Is that because you've stolen so much?
I've taken so many that they've all gone out of business.
Yeah, but also COVID, now
people aren't allowed to touch sweets anymore. It's, it's the big victim of COVID. That industry has gone down.
I stole an industrial-sized tin of black olives.
Wow.
From my school.
That's huge.
Cafeteria kitchen.
Brilliant.
Just because I wanted to.
Yeah.
And I really like black olives, but we didn't have any fridges. Like, so I hung this giant can of olives out my window for a little while, but there's nothing, like, if you ever want to quit olives, get as many olives as you can and just have your face in them all the time. It put me off olives for years.
Wow.
So there you go.
That's so, like, so, what are you rebelling against? What are you up?
Boarding school.
The best stealing crimes are when you steal things you don't need or want.
Yeah.
Just for the thrill. So when I shoplifted, I did often take things. I was quite depressed when I shoplifted in my early 20s, and it was embarrassingly late, and I'd often take things I didn't need or want. I stole a hairdryer that we actually still use in our house.
What?
That's leveled up for a fucking jelly bean, mate.
Yeah.
Like...
But I didn't really need a hairdryer.
Wow.
I just did it because I thought it was quite an impressive thing to steal. You wouldn't be able to do that now. Yeah.
Man, you can't...
It was a cheap
You can't buy a house, you can't steal a hairdryer.
God, I thought this crime you shared was brutal, but whew.
Yeah.
Some harrowing truths.
Which hairdryer is it?
It's a little grey one. I think we still use it for one of the... I think we've still got it somewhere. What about you, Katie? What crimes have you committed?
I did steal an eyeshadow.
Wow.
Ooh.
So tiny.
What colour was it? I must know the colour. I'm feeling blue.
Yeah, it was blue. Yeah.
I mean, there's only like three choices, so it was a good chance I was going to guess.
Oh, do you know what? I've stolen bananas.
No one steals brown.
Recently.
Stolen, you know, bananas?
Yeah, because you know you have to weigh them when you do the self-checkout.
Yeah.
And it's like a faff. So I was like, just putting them to one side because I didn't do it last.
I can't believe this is the episode that we find out that you guys are both going to hell. This is amazing. Yeah. The herrings go to hell. What a podcast that'll be.
The last few times I've paid for the bananas, it was just this little glitch.
I've never shoplifted, but I do remember when I was a teenager, I went shopping in like a clothes shop with my mum. And then we walked out having paid for our goods. But, you know, sometimes you walk out and the alarm will go off because sometimes they leave a tag on. Mm. And so we walked out and the alarm went off. And rather than just walking back inside, I thought it'd be funny. I turned to my mum and I just went, leg it! And ran off. And my poor mum was stood there. She was so annoyed with me. It was great. So I guess no crimes, but just great, great pranks.
Great bants, yeah.
I thought you'd have done the worst crimes out of everyone there, Hannah. I'm disappointed.
Hannah?
Yeah.
Hannah's the well-adjusted one.
Yeah, that's what we think. But we will unearth the like horrific crimes. I've never looked in your freezer.
Do you know
for
what?
Start.
Hannah did confess a terrible crime on a different episode when she brutally killed that worm.
Oh yeah, she
fried a worm by mistake.
I fried a worm.
It was an accident, to quote
it
your son.
I was about to ask you, have you ever killed a mouse? But I was going to change it into what's the biggest thing you've ever killed. So is a worm the biggest thing you've killed?
It was a really big worm, and that was its downfall, because I wanted to keep it to take it home. So I put it on a wall and it just fried in the middle of summer. Yeah, it was awful. I've always felt bad about that poor little worm.
When you first told the story, you clearly felt so bad. Like, you're exonerated. Like I.
But the biggest thing I've killed is a horse. No, wow. I'm only joking.
The biggest thing I've ever killed is this episode. Am I right? Oh, this has been fun, guys.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Hooray.
It just remains for me to say thank you so much for joining us, Richard Harry.
Yes, thank you.
I'll see you in bed later. Hannah,
you know.
After I've eaten Taylor's ass.
Oh, God. Best episode ever.
Well, that's it for this epic mashup. Thanks so much for listening. It's been great. But before we go, here's an important message from Comic Relief.
Red Nose Day is back on Friday, 18th of March, 2022. You can make a difference and have a laugh doing it. You have the power to change lives. Whether you sponsor a friend's fun run, donate to dress up, hit the bake sale hard, or simply text in from your sofa, every donation makes a difference.
Whether it's a little or a lot, the money you donate will help tackle poverty, take action against violence, and bring an end to discrimination.
Red Nose Day is built on the power of laughter and making a difference, and we've never needed that power more. If you can, please give £10 this Red Nose Day and support people living incredibly tough lives. Text PODCAST to 70210 and donate £10 today.
Text costs your donation amount plus your standard network message charge, and 100% of your donation will go to Comic Relief, a registered charity. You must be 16 or over, and please ask the bill payer's permission. For full terms and conditions, visit comicrelief.com/podcastmashup.
Drunk Women Solving Crime is produced by Amanda Redman. Music by The Lion and the Wolf. If you would like to, you can follow us on Drunk Women Pod on Twitter. On Facebook and Insta, we are Drunk Women Solving Crime. And please review us on Apple Podcasts. And also...
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you have a crime that you would like us to solve, write it on a review on Apple Podcasts as well. Thank you to Acast, and thank you for listening. Bye!
Hey, Hannah. What's better than drunk women solving crime?
I mean, absolutely nothing.
Ooh, I know. Drunk women solving crime live.
That's 1 point to Taylor.
Whatever, I won an Emmy.
Catch us live at our monthly London residency at Covent Garden Studios. Next show is Thursday, March 24th.
It's a double header, so you'll get to see two guests and two episodes recorded.
Which means a delightful second recording in the flesh. Get your tickets from our website, drunkwomensolvingcrime.com, or straight from dice.fm.
Be there or be square.
Sassy Katie.
You know it, bitches.
Live show.
Live show.
Live shows.